So good morning, everyone. My name is Aisho, and I'm one of the teachers here at the Zendo. It's nice to be sitting together on this kind of brisk spring morning. I recently had the chance to visit with my godson, Ian, who is now 24 years old, which is kind of a shock to me because the last time I saw him, he was considerably less than 24 years old. He lives in Boulder, Colorado, and I don't have the opportunity to see him very often. And he's been traveling and doing all kinds of marvelous things that you never get to do once you get older. He's been teaching English in South America and just enjoying traveling. And he's at that stage where he would like to do more traveling, but he's also feeling some pressure to get started with a career, which was one of the things we were talking a little bit about. And he was a little upset that his grandfather had recently kind of chastised him, telling him that maybe it was time to get a little more serious and start making something of himself. So this phrase, to make something of yourself, interested me in light of our study text, the Diamond Sutra. So of course, in the values of the marketplace, what is important is getting somewhere, getting ahead, or as Ian's grandfather said, making something of yourself. And of course, we all do need to make our way in the world, to support ourselves, to find ways to use our talents and be able to offer something. But of course, in the Dharma, something rather different is valued. So there's a kind of subversive wisdom that turns the values of the marketplace inside out. So instead of believing that happiness or meaning in life is going to be found in continually striving to be something different, to make something better of ourselves, we have the teaching words of the Korean Zen master Sung Sang, whose frequent guidance to his students was, "Don't make anything. Don't make anything." So what does he mean by don't make anything? Well, it's a teaching phrase that cuts right through, doesn't it? Kind of wakes us up and shines a light on how the egoic mind does make things. In fact, it makes many things. You may have noticed that in our preceding periods of Zazen, all the things the mind can be making and getting itself up to. So if we pay attention, we can start to see how our minds make self, make other, make good, make bad. And out of this great seamless flow of life, we make our own limited, kind of distorted version through the thoughts and judgments that we have, our own view on everything that we can often believe to just be the way it is, universal truths that our mind is putting up for us. So this egoic mind is often occupied with making something. So to not make anything means that as we sit in Zazen, we continually come back to what is real. Car horns, our breathing, the ache in our back, the thoughts, coming, going, some of them sticking for a while, but then going. And as we sit, we start to see a little more clearly the nature of that which pulls us away from the real. And to practice means that over and over we come back to the real. Over and over we come back to the true. So the stories going on in our heads are always compelling. It's interesting because even if they're about relatively trivial matters, they still somehow are really compelling. They just kind of suck us in. And again, our practice is to wake up and come back, to drop the story of what is happening and come back to what actually is happening. Coming back to the simplicity of each moment, to not make anything. And of course, this is very much in keeping with the teachings of the Diamond Sutra. The sutra tells us not to seize on the idea of ourself, the idea of a living being. Really, not to seize on the idea of anything. We seize on these ideas about life, about ourselves, about reality, when we grasp them with thought. When we do this, we move away from the truth. So instead of grasping or seizing, we could try to follow the teaching of Uchiyama Roshi with that well-known phrase he gives us, to open the hand of thought. Because when we open the hand of thought, life flows in and flows freely. When we open the hand of thought, we're not grasping. And we don't make anything. So I wanted to share with you this morning one of the ways that I've been working with this teaching of don't make anything. And what I wanted to talk a little bit about was what we commonly call problems. So, of course, each one of us experiences difficulties, confusion, hard choices, things just not being the way we want them to be. But a tendency I've noticed in my own practice is that the egoic mind likes to create problems. Perhaps it's more accurate to say that it likes to define things as problems, because then the ego has an important job, to be the decider. You know, and our minds like to chew over and over and over on what we have framed as a problem. We've no doubt all experienced some of this. You know, we create a problem by how our mind has chosen to view or frame some of our life circumstances. And then we have to try to solve this unsolvable puzzle. So I've noticed that some of the things that my mind gets into aren't really problems. They're just life unfolding. So it's a kind of artificial crisis. And a phrase that I've been working with when I notice that this is what my mind is starting to do is to say to myself, I'm not going to make this a problem. You know, for me, this has sometimes been quite useful and sometimes illuminating just to see what drops away. So I want to be clear on this point that, of course, there are situations, things that we would call problems, that absolutely need to be acted on. If we saw a young child wandering into traffic, we're not just going to sit on the sidewalk and say, well, I'm not going to make this a problem. I mean, of course, we're going to act. But what I'm talking about this morning isn't really a child wandering into traffic. It's more about the things the mind cooks up. And there's a lot that goes on in the mind, the dualistic mind, that just drains us of energy, creates stress and drama, and takes us out of the present moment. And once we start to see that and work with that, life becomes a little less fraught, with less drama. We return into a greater wholeness, where, as it is said, the great round pearl has no hollows. So what's asked of us if we want to practice not making anything is relinquishing, is letting go. Again, this is turning inside out the values of the marketplace. And I suspect that most of us have come into Zen practice with some gaining ideas, what is sometimes called spiritual materialism, right? And that's okay, because that's what gets us in the door. You know, we want a peaceful mind. We want wisdom or insight, awakening, more compassion. But as we sit zazen, we start to see that these are not things that our goal-oriented mind can go out and get. We start to see that what's actually asked of us is not obtaining or acquiring, but letting go. And what are we letting go of? All the things that are made by the dualistic mind. We put down a lot of our fixed ideas, our identification with our thoughts, our opinions, our separateness, our need to make life our way. Here's the Zen teacher Jakusho Kwang. He says, during zazen, you are practicing active participation in loss, even though you're sitting quietly on your cushion. For example, you're actively participating with pain changing to sensation, with noise changing to sound. This kind of awareness vanishes delusion. When you practice active participation in loss, you're reconditioning yourself to re-enter the unconditional world. My own teacher used to say, gain is delusion, loss is enlightenment. In our contemporary language, loss is where it's at. And at our February Zazenkai here at the Zendo, Roshi spoke to this very same truth, reminding us about putting down, reminding us that what we're letting go or putting down is our mind's habitual pattern of grasping. The grasping that, as Roshi reminded us, creates suffering for ourselves and for others. So there's a koan that looks at this putting down, involving the Chinese Zen master Joshu. So a student has come to see Joshu and says, if I haven't anything in mind, what shall I do? And Joshu replies, throw it out. And the student says, but if I haven't anything, how can I throw it out? And Joshu says, well, then carry it out. So the student has come in to see this great teacher, and he's maybe feeling a little arrogant about his practice. He's got an idea in his mind about what he has attained, an idea in his mind about what non-attachment is. he says to Joshua, well, if I haven't anything in mind, what comes next? What do I do now that I'm in this advanced stage of awakening? Joshua cuts right to it. Throw it out. He can see that the student has made a thing, an object, out of not having anything. He's made an object out of non-attachment. This is how devious the mind is. You know, non-attachment has become an object grasped by thought. So it's just become one more object of ego. So Joshua says throw it out, but the student doesn't, he still doesn't quite register this. You know, he's still attached, caught in his ideas that emptiness or non-attachment is a thing that he's now obtained. So he says, well, but what if I don't have anything there to throw out? And Joshua says, well, then carry it out, right? However you do it, put down your ideas about it, about awakening, about non-attachment. It's all just one more concept, one more way to separate from our experience. Throw it out and step directly into life in this moment. So Joshua is helping us to see that the constructs we have in our mind, how these constructs function, to put these burdens down so we can have a lightness and a greater freedom in being. So even our ideas and conceptualizations about awakening, or maybe especially those concepts, must be put down. You know, in Zen practice, we talk sometimes in the text, sometimes in Dharma talks or discussions, we talk about the relative and the absolute. You know, it's easy for us to unconsciously make these into things, right? As though they were sitting on a shelf somewhere. There's the absolute, or that's the relative. You know, it's important to remember that they're not things and they're not two. You know, this is how language sometimes gets us snarled up. Although, of course, we need to use language. So these kinds of ideas, even our devotion to what we conceptualize as the Dharma, must be put down. If you meet the Buddha, kill the Buddha. So just now, Manjushri is behind me, compassionately cutting away at our delusions, our concepts, our fixed ideas, our sense of our own rightness, our grasping. So we can put down some of these ideas when we see how quickly they become dead words, just intellectual concepts that have little to do with the freshness and aliveness of the actual present moment. The Diamond Sutra also speaks to this. Here's the Buddha in chapter 31 speaking to Subhuti. He says, one who has set out on the bodhisattva path should know all dharmas and have faith in them. But she should have faith in them in such a way that even the idea of a dharma does not come to be present. I really appreciate that line. It's kind of the anti-fundamentalism. That we should know the dharmas, know the teachings, that we can have faith in them. Faith in them from the ancestors, faith in them from our own experience, our own testing of them. That's what we're doing when we study the Diamond Sutra and some of the other core texts that we do study here. We're reading these teachings, we're reflecting on them, we're exploring what they mean in our own lives. But at the same time, we can have faith in them in such a way that we don't fall into grasping. So this kind of attitude or mindset is perhaps best exemplified by the that kind of well-known Zen story of Tokusan from over 1,000 years ago in China, a story that many of you know because it's linked to the Diamond Sutra. So as you may remember, Tokusan considered himself one of the leading experts on the Diamond Sutra and found himself quite indignant about the kind of teaching he heard about that was happening in the South. These rumors about a special transmission outside the scriptures. And to right these egregious wrongs, he traveled to the south of China with this heavy satchel with all of his written commentaries on the Diamond Sutra. Going to show those folks a thing or two. But after encountering Zen Master Ryutan and having an awakening experience, Tokusan ends up burning all of his sutras in front of the assembly, saying, even though one masters various profound philosophies, it's like placing a single hair in the great sky. Even if one gains all the essential knowledge in the world, it's like throwing a drop of water into a deep ravine. So all this intellectual knowledge has its place in the world. We're grateful to what scholars offer us. But we don't want to confuse this knowledge with the fresh truth of Dharma, which is always your fresh truth. So this kind of spirit is reflected in the teaching phrase that one devoted to study increases day by day. One devoted to Dharma decreases day by day. Practice is about putting down. So I encourage you to perhaps this week to look closely at your own mind, at where your mind may be making things, creating something extra, something that causes separation, causes suffering. When we can clearly see what is happening, sometimes the putting down just happens naturally, just organically. We just see it, and it happens. And in that, we find a greater lightness and ease and opening to life.